Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists on a Sunday morning. This lodge is a voluntary group of people who come together to study the philosophy of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And our efforts are geared toward keeping these universal ancient ideas to the public. Everything that we do is free and open to the public. So our policy for this lodge is to study it, to devote ourselves to the study of it, to put it in practice, make it real for us, not just intellectually discuss things, but test, check, and verify the ideas for ourselves to see if the universal ideas, such as we are all one, we are all a brotherhood, to test that, and if you live from that basis to see if things start to change in your life. When we correct false ideas, lots of things can change. We'll be talking about that today in our discussion on occult knowledge. Now, the basis for this lodge simply is that we all have a similar aim, purpose, and teaching in common, and that is the philosophy of theosophy without regard to other outside personal things. What we all have in common, and where there are so many people from so many different walks of life, but what we all have in common here is the study of theosophy and the desire and the will to learn and to help others, to help and teach others. We can always learn more as we make ourselves more fit to teach others, because isn't that how karma works? The more we help others learn, gee whiz, the more the teacher learns. Isn't that true? So we're all students. There are no particular authoritative teachers, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody's a student. And of course, this lodge, Theosophy, the United Lodge of Theosophists, is open to everybody, male, female, regardless of race, sex, creed, etc., etc. It's open to the public. So we have two meetings a week to carry out the purposes of this lodge, and those meetings are on a Sunday morning from 11 to 12. Doors open at 10:30. This morning, our topic for discussion is occult knowledge. This is simply an article that was written by Mr. Crosby, the founder of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And next Sunday's talk will be Theosophy in Daily Life. Theosophy in Daily Life. On Wednesdays, of course, we also have meetings. The doors open at 5:15. The library is available to the public from 5:15 to 7:15. It's a reference library. And there's always a student there to assist the public in any theosophical academic or theosophical pursuits that one wants to study. But also the purpose of having those hours is if you care to come maybe right after work, spend some time in the library before the meeting, reading up on the topic of the meeting, so we come in here fresh with ideas and questions, and et cetera. The meeting itself on Wednesday evenings is from 7:30 to 8:30, and we're finishing up this week and next week on the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18. There's, of course, a book table in the foyer, which makes available pamphlets, magazines, books, etc., for home study. And almost everything that's at the book table, which, by the way, is available for purchase at the cost to the lodge. We don't sell it for a profit. But also, you can pretty much get everything else online at the appropriate websites. So to find that out, you can speak with the individual sitting at the book table. The lodge is sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. Anybody's contributions of time, service, and money is certainly gratefully received, but there are no obligations imposed on anyone. We don't pass the hat. We don't have yearly dues. There's no obligations imposed or even implied. So, this morning, our topic for consideration is occult knowledge. And we will have this topic, this article summarized by a volunteer, after which there's plenty of time for discussion, questions, etc.
Occult knowledge. This chapter, written by Mr. Crosby, is a prime example of how he wrote. For within this article, we see the three fundamental ideas which are elucidated in theosophy. Through an understanding of these three ideas, one can understand the entire philosophy. So, Mr. Crosby shows us how we can do that. But it is not a physical process. It's a thinking and a learning and a self-realization process. So today, occult knowledge, which means hidden, but is also knowledge that is known. And then at the very, very end, or close to the very end, it says this: direct cognition, occult knowledge, it is to be gained by the recognition and conscious use of the powers of the inner self. It cannot be gained by reasoning, nor by the inferences reached from looking at things from outside and judging from what we are able to perceive. It is gained by what we call the intuition, the acquired knowledge of all the past. Occult knowledge enables one absolutely to determine what is the nature and essence of anything regarded. Now, to do that, we have to come to the understanding that if this knowledge can be known, who are the knowers of this knowledge? And it goes on to say that there are those beings who have lived and gone through these experiences of life. And in fact, there are many. And that the limitations that are placed on man is man's ignorance of his true nature. So there are, one of the fundamental problems is that our way of thinking, our methods of doing research, our way of analyzing things are from below upward, and we'll never find the goal. Scientific methods, psychological methods, and methods of spiritualists alike proceed from particulars to universals, and particulars are infinite. And the goal is to be found from above, below, from universals to particulars, and not the reverse. We find ourselves in the midst of a vast evolution, as there are beings, entities far below us, there are also those that are far above us. And that this common source that lies within everything. Everything is spirit, but differs to their physical manifestation. But they all have in potential the same power to perceive, to know, and to learn. Now, everything that exists has a beginning, and therefore must have an end. So, If that is a way that limits the mind, that idea itself, this knowledge, this occult knowledge, extends prior to this birth and beyond this life. And this knowledge will give us the clue to an understanding of not only our own nature, but the natures of all beings everywhere. So, all knowledge must lie and be sustained by the common source of which we are a part and an expression. The one absolute principle which is the origin, the sustainer, the container of all that ever was, is, or shall be. We call it a principle because to name it is to define it, to limit it, to belittle it. To endeavor to give it attributes of any kind is a limitation. We must go back of all limitations if we are to understand the omnipresent and immortal in us and all things.
So your questions, contributions regarding occult knowledge in this article are certainly welcome. Yes. Sure. Well, any progress, at least they're making the effort, right? So, we haven't read this study or seen this video, but chances are if science is making the effort to see really the common, what's common in all beings, let's just say humans versus animals, what the part is telling us, chances are if it's your typical 21st century scientist making the sincere effort, chances are they're comparing what? Maybe hormones, maybe behavior. Perhaps they're even comparing and contrasting EEGs. What does a dog's EEG look like in this situation versus humans? And if they stay along that line, according to what we're reading here, they're going to have a tough time getting it. And probably the reason is because, as Mr. Crosby says, if we start from below and try to work up, we're never going to get it. Rather, you start in the universals and work down, and things start to make more sense. So what we all have in common first with all beings, as was said, is the one common source and the power to be. And what we also all have in common is every being, every planet, everything in the universe, and the universe itself is a sevenfold entity. Each one and everything is a sevenfold entity. Who we really are and what the dog really is, or whatever in its essence, is the power to be, right? So if everything is the power to be, then it's not too hard, if we're starting from that perspective, it's not too hard to identify ourselves with that and recognize that in all of life. Why? And then we'll take it. Why? Because if we identify with the power to be, we're identifying with the homogeneous source of all, not with the form. We see the form. And as long as we think that the form is really the thing that we're trying to identify, we're going to try hard to, you know, make the associations. That's where we fall short. In the Kabbalah, we read, rock becomes a plant, and a plant becomes an animal, and animal becomes a human. This is a description, actually, of the intelligence that flows through the forms. It's not the evolution of the form itself. A little bit long. We're sorry. Yes.
Well, a little later on, it says that evolution takes place on the inner planes. It proceeds from within outward. So, if whatever we see on the physical plane is the last remnants of its expression, we are told to look on the plane of causation, and to do that, we must look within. Because it's not outside of us where we're going to find the answer to anything. We have to look within and see how we can become self-realized. Self-realized meaning having some kind of control over our lower natures and living in accord with these principles. We may think it's an ideal, but it's something to work on. We may do it 1 minute, we may do it 2 minutes, we may do it 30 seconds, but then the fact that we are thinking about it, only the ideas that we hold manifest themselves.
So this contribution, the ideas that we hold manifest themselves, is almost exactly the same as the beginning of the contribution, which was what? These bodies are the effect of what's going on in evolution. These bodies are the expression of what's going on. And in fact, these bodies are the delayed expression. You know, what we have in the physical is the effect of so much in our past. So when we identify ourselves with the physical, we're really identifying ourselves with something that we're using. You know, we're not the body. We are the evolving spiritual reality within it. And the body is the effect. And there's been a hand in the yellow.
If we are not able yet to be of a conscious mind to act in a way where, as described, we are that which is one, we are that spirit, everything is connected, the best evidence, we think, is sleep and dreaming. And if you've ever had a pet sit on your lap and fall asleep, and the legs start moving and the eyes start fluttering, you know that that animal is involved in something other than this physical plane. What are you chasing? What are you doing? We can't know, but it's an identical process to what we have when we let the body go of that. Now, we may go to different planes, being more evolved as a human than as an animal, but just that is an identical situation.
Certainly, it's a helpful analogy to recognize, you know, dreaming is something that we do have. We're told in the Theosophical writings that all animals dream, from the ant to the human being, all animals dream. Very interesting. Thank you. Yes.
What a nice bright sunny morning. We get up and look out the window and we see the trees blowing, the birds flying, and it's a beautiful sunny day. And we look and say, I am in thee, thou art in me. We are one. But then someone calls, the car won't start. What happened? What does that tell you?
Well, we have our daily duties, don't we? You know, it's you know, how much help does the yogi sitting up on Mount Everest meditating for years, how much help does he really offer humanity? Who's to say? There's a lot of people with cars that don't start who would really appreciate a jump, though. So it goes both ways. We have to have balance. This is the plane of action and of demonstration where we demonstrate those powers to be, the intuitional powers. And if we don't use it and share it and support ourselves, then really what's the purpose? There was a hand? But
we thought of the word duty call.
Okay.
And this is the big problem. We have our moments of reverie, and then something happens. Someone calls and says the car was in trouble. So it seems that my behavior should be the same in both instances. The call to duty.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes.
Well, going a little further with this, when there's a natural, it could be catastrophe, or it could be a really, really big snowstorm, like 2 feet or more that you get every several years, but it does come. Well, we find that people come together, and you get to know neighbors you never knew. They could have lived there for 2 years, and you just say hello. But a sense of community develops. So, and then we see the oneness. We're living in our separate lives from day to day, year to year even, but some event is a catalyst to bring a sense of community and a sense of oneness. And then we forget about our isolation. We forget about whatever problems we're having. They go away.
Isn't that the truth? And the same idea with weddings and funerals. You know, when something big is going on that affects a lot of people, it's just, isn't it natural in the character of everybody just to work together to find the right thing to do in the situation, in this challenge, including even, I mean, look what happened in the United States in the event of 9/11. There was a hand here.
Well, there is a consciousness of a nation, the consciousness of the world. And our perception of life, again, is on the outer planes. We judge our life by what we see. And we are told again and again and again that we are, if we are evolving from within outward, the way we think becomes how we act. You may not think that's true, but all you have to do is come to these rooms year after year after year, and you don't have to want to. By studying these ideas, your mind begins to change. Then your behavior changes. And then, you know, things just change, but to the world around you, you're not really changing.
Right. So when we study these ideas, and we make a shift, and we look closely at what ideas have we been holding that are false, and how are we going to make the shift. We think that there's a lot of folks around us that recognize that, and that learn from that, and sometimes even gee whiz, sometimes, wow, isn't he thinks really differently, you know? And there's a lot of folks that like to listen to these ideas, even though they have no intention, at least right now, of implementing them. And so when we talk about false ideas versus true ideas, you know, what's, you know, where's the practicality there? Well, behind everything is our ideas of what God is. If collectively as a nation, one nation thinks, says, teaches, worships a God that wants them to do this, that, and the other thing, they're worshiping a personal God created in their own image, aren't they? According to their own thoughts and desires. And another nation says, well, this is God of the universe as we create him, and he actually wants this, that, and the other. Really, what's going on in these religious wars, it's not even really about religion. It's about wealth and condemnation and you know, one-upsmanship. So if we switch from the false idea of a personal God who decides who's condemned and who's going to heaven, who's, you know, going to have challenges in this life, who's going to have a wealthy life, if we move from that to the idea that the divine principle in nature, which is our source, couldn't care less about whether you're wealthy or not, because it's on you. The issue then becomes, it's our responsibility to learn and follow the law. And of course, as we were saying, one of the best ways to learn and follow the law is to teach as best that we know, because the more we teach, the more we learn. That's karma, right? So if we shift to the, you know, it's as we would say, not that this is a personal thing, but as an example, it's as ridiculous to think that there's a God who likes her but not her. It's as ridiculous to think that the sun decides to give her a sunburn and make her have a nice golden tan. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the laws of nature, and her skin is going to get sunburned if she doesn't take care of herself, and hers won't. So learn the laws of nature. It's not that the sun likes you or doesn't like you, and it's the same way with these false ideas of God. The more we believe that God wants stuff or wants us to do stuff, the more we distance ourselves from our true essence, and the more we turn responsibility and power over to people who try to dictate to us what God wants. There's been a hand back here, and then we'll go to you.
At the very end of this 18-paragraph
sure.
part of the book, it talks about will not being a thing in itself. It is consciousness in action.
Right.
And as we think or desire in any direction, the will works, which we think was just explained. That will is weak or strong according to our ideas of ourselves, our thoughts, our desires, our aspirations. It strengthens our concentration. So it's partly recognizing who and what we are, and then putting it into action in the right direction. And we might make a mistake. We might do harm. As long as we recognize that, try again, and ever do better, ever keep trying. We're on the path where the natural spiritual consciousness or harmony will work with us, will energize us. But first, those incorrect thoughts, or those weak thoughts, or painful thoughts, whatever they might be, must be done away with, and we concentrate on our divine aspirations.
Thank you for the contribution. So what we're saying here, and also Mr. Crosby brings out in the article, is this idea of will, which is a power of the soul. He also talks about intuition, a power of the soul. Compassion, the law of laws. Compassion is not a feeling. It's not part of our emotional nature. It is a power of the soul. So this intuition to know everything about a situation without trying to reason from cause to effect, or without reasoning from premise to conclusion, as we clear out the false ideas that we hold and operate from the real nature of who we are, there's a release. There's a release of these possibilities and these powers. It's all within us. We have it. It's just a matter of, do we use it and do we recognize it when it's there? So the development of the intuition, the development of compassion, which simply is to identify with the conditions of another and understand what the conditions are of another, so we can better be of service and help that other, right? So this brings to ideas, this brings to the fore, actually, is these powers that Mr. Crosby talks about: will, intuition, spiritual will, compassion, etc. That makes us different. That's unique to the human kingdom. we can choose to use that, and as we use that, those are the powers that we use to assist nature in nature's evolution, and in doing that, we assist ourselves in our evolution. There was a hand here.
Yes, all these powers that we have within us, these higher spiritual powers, they're lost when we just focus on the particulars. And earlier was stated about wars and conflicts around the world. They're looking for position, power, prestige. You know, what did the teacher say? The teacher said this, they said the other thing. This is the way it should be interpreted. It's self will run riot, is really what it is. And so it's just, for the past at least 1500 years, society at large, East and West, at least, has been focusing on particulars and not universals. We get lost in the details.
We get lost because we identify ourselves with the details, and it becomes a mess rather than operating. What comes to mind here is, you know, the statement in the philosophy where it says that an adept, you know, so often we think of Mahatma as an adept kind of abstractly, and oh, what's it like? Well, an adept is only an adept when he's exercising the powers of an adept. An adept is only an adept when he's exercising the powers of it. So the implication there is sometimes he's not, you know? Well, sometimes we're actually, in our own embryonic way, if we can say, operating from universals, and maybe that gives us more influence over our own life than when we operate from particulars, because by definition we're cutting ourselves off from our enlightened mind and dealing with our lower mind and personal stuff. The more we identify with that, the more we edify it. Conversely, if we start the day each day with study and devotion and focus on the universals, then we're fertilizing the garden of the day to keep it going and keep it moving. And we can do this. This is not far away. This is not something only adepts do. This is what theosophy is for, is to teach us and encourage us to do this. And over time, it has an effect on the way we think. It has an effect on the way that others think around us as well. And the one last thing we want to say is, remember, an adept takes responsibility. Excuse me?
An adept takes
responsibility actively for everything around him and controls the lower forces around him, rather than being passive and being affected by those lower forces. Part of being affected by those lower forces is thinking that if we move the chairs around on the Titanic, things will get better. It doesn't. There's different things we need to do. Okay, yes.
In reading this article, we are reminded that this is very much like the Bhagavad Gita. And it's stating that who we are, and where we're going, and how to get there. And that how to get there is something that we have lost. And the Gita points it out quite specifically. And it begins with the very, very simple thing that our minds are not stable. They're always going off one thing to another. So concentration is very important. But if we think we are changeable essences, bodies, we're never going to be able to concentrate. We have to go back to that perceiver, that immortal self, that witness. We must find that, and that becomes our foundation, because that is what is universal in all of us. And from that perspective, we can begin to guide our life rather than just be thrown by life itself.
Thank you. So then, we think where we're going with this is how quickly do we get sucked in right here, up here. Excuse me. Thank you. Thanks. How quickly do we get sucked in to a families, to our own families or our own friends, unexpected little disharmonies and jump in with both feet and react to it. And then the other side of the equation is, isn't there certain times when, no matter what's going on there, really we can stand back and say, oh, there it goes again. I learned in theosophy that I'm not that, and I don't have to react that way. Maybe I'll either walk out and let them fix it themselves, or if I'm going to participate, participate from a more distant rather than a connected identification with the problem situation. And it's amazing. And we start to do that more often if we meditate and focus in the morning, read the devotional books, and prepare ourselves for the day. It really helps us keep perspective on the particulars and not identify. So what it's saying then is that we identify with that within us which is stable and concentrated, and identify less with the instability, and we can affect that for good. Yes, in the green. In the green. Yes, in the back.
One of the biggest realizations is to realize, really realize, all we have is spiritual powers. The power to see, the power to hear, to think, to will, to choose. They're all spiritual, they're not material. It's how we choose to use them. So the examples that were given of how we react in any situation, it is always our attitude and nothing else. If our attitude is, I am here to learn, to love, to serve, to share, we're going to behave quite differently from an attitude that says, oh, I'm here to defend myself, or to put myself forward, or to show how great I am. So it's our attitude, and that itself is a spiritual power. So it's study, living, and learning.
So it's study, living, and learning. And we remember reading one piece. It was actually HBB's teacher. Something went down. Something was said, and it came about that HBB's teacher himself actually said, well, yes, I can get angry. Would you rather me pretend and not be angry and just keep it all in and pretend that I'm something that I'm not? You know, even perfected beings are on a path toward ever increasing perfection. Yes.
We're just thinking back about animals, great nature. If we are unable at this point to reach up and have it come through us and have us understand, look at great nature. There have been amazing photos and videos. The baby elephant's mother is killed. Well, the whole group of elephants surrounds this child and takes responsibility for it. Or the, let's say, tiger cub has lost its mother. Well, another species of animal will feed it, which doesn't make any sense to us, but it's actually this in motion without the consciousness of it. We need to pay attention to the world around us. There are amazing things going on in the lower kingdoms, and our responsibility is to help lift them up and have a good influence on them. So we would ask, what are we doing to nature today, globally? But pay attention, there are some wonderful examples out there.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes.
What we've been talking about are the three fundamentals, a way of looking at those three fundamentals. And we mentioned deity, law, evolution. Does this lesson teach us that we are participants in that grand scheme?
Sure. Well, are we participants in that grant screen? Well, we're really, in essence, we are co-creators in that grand scheme, and if we view ourselves, in fact, as the one essence, the one cause, we are the creator. We are that which creates and causes the evolution. So evolution is not the physical, we're not talking about the physical adaptations. What we're talking about is the spiritual evolution from within outward of us, soul, collective soul. The purpose of the universe is for the evolution of soul. Well, how that is seen is evolution, or soul evolves through form, and the process simply is for form to change and evolve in such a way that it acquires greater and greater and greater facilities and capacities to experience nature. And so with each life that we live, if we live according to the law, we're setting up certain causes, the effect of which our capacities and powers and faculties will be greater, say, by the end of one life than it was in the beginning, or more so in the next life. Karma always being kept in mind, because sometimes the door gets shut for other past things. But long term, the point is we evolve, and as we evolve, we use and create for ourselves forms that have more and more capacity to experience life and nature, and to affect life and nature, and to assist all of life in what? In the purpose of life, which is the evolution of soul. So, and one thing that's helpful in understanding, what do you mean the evolution of soul? If we consider that soul is, the substance of soul is the accumulated experience that it has undergone, and all of the positive higher spiritual aspirations and ideas assimilated into it, that's the substance of soul. And so the purpose of the universe is to evolve soul, to grow in through experience. In the green in the back, yes.
One of the things we can evolve is a different attitude about the difficult things that happen to us. The car broke down, but how did we know that that didn't prevent us from being part of something awful that was going to happen? We can change our attitude and say, wait, everything that happens to me, whether it's good or bad, is for my benefit. It might be to teach me a difficult lesson. It might be to humble me. Whatever it is, it's for my good. And if we start having that attitude, life looks a lot different.
In this next quarter's periodical, which is out today for October, November, and December, one of the statements that HPB, and it has exactly to do with attitude, one of the statements that HPB makes, it's fantastic, was, you know, if theosophy had cardinal virtues and mortal sins, which it doesn't, but if it did, the first cardinal virtue would be gratitude, and the first mortal sin would be ingratitude. So if we can look on the problem with the car as an opportunity to learn more about the car, because you will learn more about it if you take the steps to learn why it broke down. Be grateful that you can. Be grateful that you have a car. That which we focus on, what, disappears, or does it grow? So if we continue to focus on that which we are grateful for, then what's going to grow? Things in our lives that we're grateful for, right? And it's all, as was said by the contribution, it's all a matter of attitude, how we look at the situations.
Well, the article is called Occult Knowledge.
Right.
So, I mean, there's an expression of much occult knowledge. But at the very end, it states this. If we realize that we are spiritual beings and think and act in the right direction, at once, the spiritual will begins to work. The power of concentration is strengthened. The feeling of responsibility grows. The whole nature begins to change, to be transformed, great transition is going on.
Right.
So it's nothing to do with outside of us. It really is this concentration and this attitude that we must develop within ourselves. And everything on the outer plane will change. We don't have to, try to change it. It will change.
And one of the things, thank you. So it's all about, everything is going to be affected by our attitude toward it. And the part in this contribution in the article that had to do with, we have the power and take responsibility, that's huge in theosophy, because it's not God's fault in theosophy. Your physical limitations aren't your parents' genes in theosophy. You're here because that's what we're here, because this is what we needed to take. And the point being is, so stop whining, take responsibility, and when the individual takes responsibility, even for stuff that all we know is like, it's in my life, therefore it's mine, I don't know how it got here, I don't get it, but it's mine. And if it's mine, I need to fix it, or I need to work with it, or I need to use it for the better. Taking responsibility, just from a simple academic Psych 101 perspective, empowers the individual to do something about it. Not taking responsibility for the challenges in our lives weakens the individual and gives him opportunity to exhaust his power by focusing on who to blame, who should fix it, woe is me. That's part of what this whole thing is all about. First of all, it's mine, and that is the empowering attitude to have to fix it, right? Yes, in the back.
It appears that in that first comment, going outside and seeing the relationship between what I see and feel here and what's taking place around me, I must have been that guy who built the first airplane and kept crashing until he developed a better propeller. Once he had developed a better propeller, advance was made, progress. And we know about flying today, but how painful was it? And until he just kept trying, and he came up with that better flying engine. So those fundamental ideas, the propositions, are good keys.
Thank you. With regard to the propeller, he would never be able to make the propeller better if he didn't use it, observe it, see what it wasn't doing, see what it was doing, and change it accordingly. He could make the propeller 10,000 times and not make it better if he's not focused on doing on following through. So that follows into, with karma, this whole action and reaction. Sometimes we think, oh, well, I messed that one up again, but I must have learned something from it, because you always learn. Well, no, you don't always learn something from it, because often we don't even know what we don't focus on what we're doing. Part of the devotions in the morning is stop, reflect, observe. Yesterday was effect to cause, to effect to cause, to effect to cause, which brought things about. And if we reflect on the things that we did, we actually grow in wisdom because of the simple act of reflecting, of how could I have done differently? What would have been different? Not personal judgment, oh, I really screwed that one up. No, leave that out. You look at yesterday, or in the evening, reflect back on the day, and start with right now. Don't start with the morning. Start with right now. Go from effect to cause, to effect to cause, to effect to cause. Impersonally, unemotionally, looking at what happened, and the effect that that has on our day-to-day activity actually is to live more in the moment. That is a natural effect that we have if we continuously. Now, another effect that that has as we do that through life is to take all the lessons that we can learn from our activities, and we assimilate it. We assimilate the lessons more as we go, because we're mindfully thinking about it. Conversely, if we don't do that, all of the lessons that were there for us to live, we have to eventually assimilate. A lot of it's going to happen, especially the higher aspirations and spiritual experiences are eventually going to assimilate after death in Devakan. It could create a 20,000-year Devakan if we've lived in a certain way. Or if we live in a reflective moment-to-moment way, we assimilate and grow, or soul evolves because we assimilate the value of our experiences from day to day as we go. One way or another, it's going to happen. But the point is, let's not live mindlessly, because then we've missed the opportunity to learn what we can from the day. And it may not be another four lifetimes before that kind of a lesson comes back to us that has to, that we have to incorporate eventually. There's been a hand. Yes.
We forget if it was Tesla or Einstein, but one of them was questioned. 99 times it took for you to find the answer. You did this 100 times. What kept you going? I found 99 times the wrong way to do it, so I know not to do it that way again. And I kept going, and eventually I figured it out. So that is the mindful in our lives. I keep having an aversion to this person. I don't know why, but okay, let me try a different attitude with them. Let me come to it in a different mindset. There was someone that I knew that I worked with. I couldn't stand to be in his presence with no idea why. And I said, okay, I don't remember the karma. We must have some karmic link. We didn't work out. And I seriously worked on, one day I'll be happy to see him. And there was. There was a day, and every day thereafter I was happy to see him. I don't know what the specifics were, but it was a mindful exercise.
You took control. Thank you. Yes.
It was Thomas Edison who said that.
And the light bulb.
Being asked about the light bulb.
Thank you.
How many times he failed. And his comment was, we have to learn what not to do on the way to learning how to do and what to do. So we can't be defeated by our mistakes. We do, as you said, we review them, learn from them.
Thank you. Success is not measured by heights achieved, but by obstacles overcome. So let's consider an exercise that one can practice outside. We talk about, you know, false ideas. And if we live and think and operate from a false idea, then the effect of it is going to, you know, in this today and today's age, it's going to cause separation between us, or seemingly cause separation between us and those around us. Well, what are those false ideas? Couple. We talked about today, we talked about our basic understanding of what God is. Is there a priest up here or a mother superior saying, this is what you have to think? No, this is theosophy. These are ideas we present as a proposition. Take it, test it, decide for yourself. But the ancient teaching is, always has been, not the personal God, but the impersonal divine in all. Not that there's a God telling you what's going to happen in your life, but that the God within has the power to create your life. So that's one. The second idea that's important is that this universe is a universe of law. Nothing happens to us accidentally. We're not the victim, even though sometimes it seems that way. if we accept that we're not the victim, that this has come to me because obviously I have something to learn from it and have the attitude of gratitude for this big lesson, even though we may not right now know how to handle it, that empowers us. We force our own spiritual evolution when we take on challenges and problems that we seemingly are overwhelmed by. And then what happens? What happens to the soldier when he goes to boot camp, scared to death, he's right out of high school, facing challenges he's never conceived of, and in a few short months, he's able to do so much more than he ever would have dreamed of, and really, it's not physical, it's mental, it's focus, because a lot of those guys, they were on the football team, but they were never challenged. So physically, not too different. Mentals, that's what matters. You take it on and go for it, and we force ourselves to evolve. That's one of the things that makes us different from all the other, you know, from the other kingdoms, is we can take responsibility for our own spiritual evolution. And so also we have to remember that we don't operate in a vacuum. Everything that we do really does affect other people around us. Sometimes it seems like kind of abstract and vague, like, oh, what I do today is going to create, you know, change the whole world. Well, it's going to change your family, or it's going to affect your friends. It's going to affect the way we think. So if we're mindful of what we say and how we act, knowing that everything we do, first of all, comes back, but also before it comes back, it affects other people, then what we're doing is literally developing compassion. Developing compassion is the same as saying developing the power of the soul, because that's what compassion is. It's a power of the soul. So all of this is all about, you know, evolution of the soul, about coming to an enlightened point eventually, so that we can know everything that there is to be known about anything that we choose to know. And we get to that point by being of service to others. There's a hand here.
But compassion is an absolute, you know, attribute. Not that the absolute has an attribute, but is a part of our spiritual nature.
It's a power of our spiritual nature, yes.
And that what holds us back, again, what was said, is our ignorance. We do not realize who we are and what we're capable of. Not understand that. Look at the world in which we live.
True. And we are capable of making steps in the direction to learn more and more of who we really truly are, and to operate and think from that from that perspective, and to do so more so today than we did yesterday. That the question is not where are you on the path. The question is not are you an adept yet. Question is, are you on the path? What direction are you headed? So, just an idea for consideration.
Isn't the question hello?
Hello? Our meeting is adjourned. We'll see you Wednesday or next Sunday.